Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
America, I have a problem. And maybe we all have a problem, or many of us do. And that's being out of shape, maybe a little overweight, and not having the body shape that you want. Well, we're here to try to do something about it. I'm on a mission personally, and I'm going to do it here with the objective of trying to help others as well on this mission of combining football history with conditioning and making a better, healthier America. It is Get in Shape the Football Way, and we have more about it coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren. He's at PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to our new segment. It's called the Intro into Get in Shape the Football Way. And we're going to cover some inspiring items from football, conditioning drills and exercises and training regimens that have inspired others, including myself, to incorporate into my own training to try to get some weight loss and have better health, even at my age in my late 50s. And perhaps maybe that's something that you can do as well. But before we get into that, let's make sure that the information that you're about to hear is for educational purposes only and should not be interpreted as medical advice. Always consult a qualified healthcare professional before starting any new exercise program, and especially if you have an existing health condition. They can help you determine if this program is safe and appropriate for you and create a personalized plan to reach your fitness goals. And make sure that take that sound advice. I have done that myself to make sure that I'm staying safe before I do any of these things. And some I'm not even going to attempt because, as you'll see why. So conditioning in football goes back a long way. And what are some of the roots of these conditional drills and exercise programs in football? Where did it all start? So back in 2023, I spoke with Dr. Randall Ballmer, author of the book Passion Plays. And here's what he said on some of the roots of football conditioning.
Yeah, what happens, well, first of all, I focus on the four major team sports in North America. That would be baseball, football, hockey, and basketball. And all four of those sports really develop, for the most part, roughly from the middle of the 19th century to the middle of the 20th century. By that time, by the middle of the 20th century, those sports have more or less assumed their current form. But as these sports are developing in the 19th century, they develop against the background of the Industrial Revolution. And what's happening in America, North America more generally, is that men in particular are beginning to work outside the home and outside the farm. They're no longer engaging in subsistence living. They're beginning to work in factories, textile mills, and so forth. And many of them also in sedentary office jobs. So there's a great deal of concern in the Anglo-American world, that is both in North America as well as back in Britain, that men are becoming too sedentary. That is, they're becoming, they're not going, getting outside enough. They're not engaging in athletics. They're becoming weak and even sissified. And a number of religious leaders are noticing that, and they very cleverly, I think, try to combine religion, in this case Protestantism, with athleticism. And they come up with a movement that is known to historians as muscular Christianity. That is to say that we want to appeal to men to be athletic, to be virile, and also to be in the churches. Probably the best example of that institutionally would be the YMCA, the Young Men's Christian Association. to combine religion with recreation.
Wow. So the YMCA is instrumental in bringing football along as a sport. Kind of interesting. Now let's go back to last year, 2023, when we had some thoughts that Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com had to say about the Y and early football.
The YMCA had a school that is now Springfield College in Massachusetts. It was a school to train people to go out into the world and be YMCA directors. So, I mean, it was kind of like a seminary or however you want to think about it. But, you know, this is in the day when there weren't physical education majors anywhere, you know, and if you wanted to become somebody who would go out and teach, you know, physical fitness, and, you know, you also, you know, bought into some of the, you know, the religious side of it, then the YMCA training school was the place to be.
The YMCA and other organizations are beating the drum towards young guys getting active in sports, you say, Tim?
Arguments for playing football and justifications for football was this thing called the muscular Christianity movement that came out of, you know, England. And so it was just kind of this belief in the mind and the body and the spirit, and that, you know, football was a way to meld, you know, that all three of them came together in football and provided good training for young men who needed to be hardy.
That Springfield, Massachusetts YMCA school mentioned indeed was a catalyst for football innovation. We've had a couple experts tell us so far. Now, famous coach Amos Alonzo Stagg was a student and did a little bit of work there and some training towards his career at that YMCA in Springfield, right after playing on the gridiron at Yale for Walter Camp, the father of modern football. Now, Stagg worked with another famous sports pioneer in a training device for football. And Jennifer Taylor Hall writes about it and told us about it back in 2022 from her book, Amos Alonzo Stagg, Football's Man in Motion. Here's what Jennifer had to say.
They were actually students, and Mr. Stagg was a student coach at the YMCA International School, which is now known as Springfield College in Massachusetts. But they were there in the late 1880s, and the president of the school, or superintendent, he was called, needed an activity to keep the football players occupied in the wintertime to you know, keep them well conditioned and but also keep them out of trouble. And so you can imagine the cold in Massachusetts. And so he told James Naismith to come up with a game, an activity to keep the boys busy and in good condition. And so that's how the game of basketball was born. He literally, Naismith had 2 weeks to come up with something. And he kind of recalled some games from his childhood in Canada and pieced some things together and came up with the early version of basketball, which was a little rougher than we know today. It maybe had a little bit of rugby influence. The first few contests ended up with some blood, and I don't know that bones were broken, but there were a lot of bruises, let's say. But Alonzo Stagg was involved in those early games.
For example, then it's no accident that basketball was invented by a Presbyterian minister at the YMCA training school in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is today, of course, Springfield College. And he was charged by his instructor with inventing a game that would occupy young men between the baseball season and the football season.
Fascinating. Basketball was originated to help train players for baseball and for football, and then turned into a major sport all its own. Now let's refocus though back into football training through this early game. There were many instances in the 19th and early 20th century of teams getting ready and conditioning to play football. But one of them is really interesting, and it comes from a book called Coach Yost, Michigan's Tradition Maker, written by Dr. John Behe. And Dr. John Behe sat down with me back in 2021 to talk about Coach Yost and this training event that happened early in his career.
He liked that idea of having early season training. He had seen and experienced that in his second year at West Virginia as a player. And so he wanted to do that again. Michigan had already been doing that. They'd done it a couple of years before Yost got there, and they went over on not Lake Michigan, to the other side, Lake Huron, and they had a campground over there, and they go and the water was ice cold, and a part of these guys would go through drills, you know, but they would, but it was very, it was physically important to get ready for the season. But they also, but it was mentally important too, and nobody shied away from it. And so they would jump in that darn water at the end of their drills, and then run back to the cabin to try to get the, to keep them freezing to death. And the Michigan coaches liked that, and their athletic trainer liked that. He was a track coach also, Keane Fitzpatrick. He thought that just built a strong inner will, toughness. You're doing something nobody else has done. Yeah, you're not ordinary. You're above, you know, you're outstanding. So anyway, they did physical training, early season, cold swim, dips, nutrition.
Training, conditioning, and nutrition, as Dr. B, he said, were the early staples of getting young men ready to play football in a lengthy, combative, strenuous season. Now, we're going to talk about more of this in some upcoming episodes of this series on football conditioning. But this episode is by nowhere done. This is the end of the first segment, and we're going to go on to talk about some other great items that are coming up. Now, we want to thank Jennifer Taylor Hall and Dr. John Behe, Dr. Randall Balmer, and Timothy Brown for giving us such great insight from these previous talks that we had them on our shows. You can go back and catch their full episodes on Pigskin Dispatch podcast and on pigskindispatch.com. You can find some great items about them too. But coming up, we have coaches David Hashemi, strength and conditioning coach, and Coach John Davis, who's got a lot of expertise being a coach, a trainer, and an executive in football. And we're going to talk about some drills, a couple drills, one that I'm going to try to do and incorporate. I've been doing in my exercise program, and one that is illegal in football in many cases. Coming up right after this. Let's start off our first segment on something, maybe an exercise that some of us can do. I've incorporated this into my daily routine, and it's something that's called the burpee. Now, the burpee is a unique full body exercise and often referred to as the up down. So it combines a squat thrust with an additional standing jump between repetitions. What's fascinating is that while it's primarily anaerobic and performed individually, it can transition into an aerobic exercise when strung together with rapid succession over longer durations. Contrary to the quirky theory many of us might had, including myself, the origin of the burpee is not related to a body function. It's a fascinating story that's quite different from what we might expect. The burpee exercise, developed by Royal Hudson Burpee Sr., a U.S. psychologist, a physiologist that has its roots in 1939. Burpee, who earned his PhD in applied physiology from the Teachers College of Columbia University in 1940, developed it as part of his doctoral thesis. This simple yet challenging exercise is a quick and easy fitness test to assess agility and coordination. As a side note, it turns out the Belch story, at dictionary.com, states quote, the first records of the word burp come around the year 1930. It's an Americanism that is meant to imitate the sound a person makes when they burp, end quote. So if true, could we connect Mr. Burpee and his exercise to the slang term burp? Maybe. But let's hear what an expert has to say.
My name is David Ashemi. I'm a certified strength conditioning coach. I'm the director of sports performance currently at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven, Connecticut. Actually, we use them at Southern to elevate the heart rate. So before any type of workout, there's a systematic way that we warm the body up in different phases. So whether, you know, especially with football, but any of our other athletes too, we start with small muscle activation. So minor movements to wake up the small muscles around the hips, the shoulder, the abdomen, just to get the core of the body starting to move and, you know, get the blood pumping to those small blood vessels. Then from there, we work on dynamic movements. Dynamic movements will open up the large muscle groups to be ready for strength and powerful activity. And then there's a ballistic type of warm-up, which I consider a burpee to be a ballistic type of warm-up, where the sole purpose is to elevate the heart rate and really get a high volume of blood pumping to the extremities of the body. We typically do either a squat jump or a burpee or something like that directly before I transition them into the weight training, because it will help us reach submaximal heart rate as quick as possible. A lot of coaches use it as a punishment. The old school coaches will, you know, 10 burpees or 10 up downs. Well, no, I mean, I actually see it as a purpose, as a way to get the body ready for strenuous activity.
Yeah, the burpee is something that I've tried and I've implied into my own regimen of exercise. Like I told you, I had about 2 months of going on Nutrisystem where I pretty much diet only. We did some walking, did some treadmill walking during the winter months, and I lost 17 pounds and I still had a ways to go. I sort of plateaued after those 2 months and kept the 1500 calories a day, eating foods that I prepared myself and prepared my menu myself, but still stayed the same. So I wanted to up the ante in my exercise part of it. So not only walking at least, 11,000 to 17,000 steps a day, I started doing a little bit of aerobic jogging into it. And I did burpees and some other exercises that we'll talk about here in some later episodes. But the next one that I'm going to talk about is not the case of something that you want to try at home. Definitely you do not. As a matter of fact, in many cases, it's not allowed anymore of this football conditioning drill that David Ashemi will tell us about.
So Oklahoma drills are as old as the game itself. There's a lot of language out there, a lot of talk out there that, you know, now with concussions and is the drill really practical for practice purposes? It is still very commonly used at the college level. Not so sure so much at the professional level, but at the high school, obviously, and college level, it's still heavily used. As long as the guys on the line of scrimmage, the offensive defensive linemen, are being taught to engage and disengage properly, and the running back being taught to use the block properly, it really should end up being a one-on-one tackle drill in a practical sense, right? Linebacker reads the block, peels off the block, comes and scrapes and tries to make a tackle. Running back is reading the hip of the offensive lineman. If he does a good job sealing off the block and make a quick cut, then he can get into the end zone and win the drill. It is definitely the most practical live drill that is still done today. You know, I remember doing drills where it was just, you know, open field tackle, you know, run into the guy as hard as you can, right?
Yeah, the Oklahoma drill came about in the 1940s from Oklahoma Sooners coach Bud Wilkinson, hence the name the Oklahoma drill. It was, a great item, as David said, of training players to go one-on-one, which you enact some of the real action in games. And if you can overcome that in practice in a limited space, a bigger, 53 and some odd yards wide field one-on-one, maybe you can shake that tackler, or maybe that tackler can make the open field hit and bring down of the opponent. So that is our show for today. We really thank you for joining us of, football and fitness, and hopefully it inspired you. Hopefully it educated you a little bit. I know it's inspired me and it's helping me, but like we said, consult a medical professional before you try any of these events or exercises, and make sure that you are adequately physically fit to do some of those, because football players are well-tuned athletes. People like myself are not, and probably many of you share the same couch potato-ism that I have. But I want to get there, and I want to be healthier than I am now, and we want to make a healthier America and a healthier world, because it's a better place to be. So hopefully this will help everyone, and want you to tune back next time for some more great football and fitness, as we'll have some more experts, some more history, and some more great conditioning drills. Till next time, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.